me know. I'm in the studio because I got 21 seconds before. I got to go. You're going to see me on the studio going on and on. See me in the studio going on and on. Black women
See,
know.
this is you getting older, right? You should be able to reel this
I
off,
know
shouldn't
we
you?
did. I
This
got
is
21
you.
seconds. Tuh,
Go,
tuh, tuh.
21 seconds to go, go, go.
Greetings, EastEnders fans, and welcome to another episode of Albert Square After Dark, your weekly EastEnders podcast, this week discussing the episodes broadcast between the 15th and the 17th of April 2024. Hi, we're back. Hello. Did you miss us? We missed you. Don't blame me. Blame this one next to me. It's Ree. Hello, Ree. How are you? All right?
Hello. Yes,
hello.
I'm good, thanks. Sorry that I went on one holiday for the first time in
quite
forever.
Yeah, literally. Like, you're
holiday.
I've had more time off than you have, so I think it's entitled. Did you have a nice time in Brighton?
I did, thank you. Yes, my my 2 year old, as she now is, her highlight was catching a bus.
As if she's
the
two.
Time.
As if she's two. But what happened?
And yeah, we took her all that way, and catching a bus was her favourite part of the entire trip. So,
I mean, you could do that where you live, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly.
Buses where you live. I've seen them.
Exactly.
Many buses.
I think you can get them anywhere, Rob, in the country, to be honest.
Amazing. What will they think of next? what a week we have had. Thank God you weren't off last week. That's all I can say. Thank God you were off last week and not this week. Oh,
yeah, definitely.
We have much to discuss. Let's have a bit of a chat about what we missed last week, first of all.
Yeah. Okay.
So last week, obviously, we lost one of the greatest new characters to come along in a long, long time, Gloria. She has passed on. She has died. I'm very gutted about it. What did you think of all that? Because now, obviously, Eddie has been sent to prison. We'll talk a bit more about Eddie when we talk about George in a bit with this week. But Gloria, she had a heart attack and then she sort of collapsed and then she died and then Eddie went to prison. I thought it was all very nicely done. I do think Gloria, killing off Gloria has been a bit premature, if I'm honest.
I 100% agree. But I'm wondering why they're going to go with it, because I think they must have a plan to do she's been killed off.
I think now the plan is that Junior is the next chapter of this. We're going to meet George Junior. I predict that
so you think that they just killed her off so that he could come back?
Like, well, I mean, I think
for
that,
him to come back.
I think that the parents sort of, they were very much... like, they had their own little set of things to do. You know, both actors were probably contracted until now. I don't think we'll see very much of Eddie again in the future because he's going to just rot in prison, and so he should.
By the way, I cried when Gloria died, by the way.
Well, I was close, yeah. I mean, you know, playing...
You were close. That's something
close,
then, Rob.
Close.
That's good for you.
I'm like a stone, me. because I did set it here this week. So,
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, you'd have to be made of lead not to have been emotionally touched by this week. I mean, I am gutted about Gloria because I think she was such a fascinating character. There was a side to me, even though everything that went on with Gloria and George was absolutely beautiful, you know, the playing of the lullaby and the way that she died with George there, you know, happy to sort of be free of Eddie. That was all lovely. I do sort of think that it was all sort of tied up quite nicely with a nice big bow, sort of Eddie goes to prison and Gloria just dies out of nowhere.
Now we're done with George's parents next.
It does kind of feel a little bit like that, but it does kind of push George forward into what we get this week, which was some great stuff with the Fight Club. We'll talk about that in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Really good stuff last week. I am going to miss Gloria a lot, and I thought Elizabeth Council was... I mean, both Christopher Fairbank and Elizabeth Council, I think, have been probably some of the best EastEnders casting in the show's history, like guest cast, like amazing. Mm-hmm. Like amazing characters.
It is a shame though, because like you kept saying, there was so much more to Gloria than we saw. Like,
yeah,
we didn't like. Obviously, we know that she was somewhat trapped in inverted commas with Eddie, but we didn't really explore it that in depth, did we? Like,
no.
Do we know whether he ever got physical with her? Was it all coercion? Do you know what I mean? We didn't. I think we could have had so much more opportunity to delve into that, and it would have been really interesting as well. But.
I mean, I think the reason I'm so disappointed is just because of how good the actor was. And you want someone like that on the rostrum full time, don't you? Like, because the Elizabeth Council was just phenomenal as Gloria. Yeah. So shame, but, you know, nicely done.
We're disappointed in a nice way because they were so good.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
The other thing that came out of last week was Dean getting charged and sort of set up for the murder of Keanu.
Mm.
We kind of said the week before last that it kind of felt like a sort of suitable justice for, and in fairness, what happens this week has sort of demonstrated that, that, you know, he doesn't go to prison for what he did do, but he's going to prison for something he didn't do. And that sort of feels like the most suitable justice we're going to be able to get out of the situation now, you know?
Yeah. I'm just wondering, mind you, they believed Linda's statement, didn't they, straight away? Like, why would she only have just come forward about... Then again, she was quite.
Well, they've got proof that she did report. They'll be able to find that she did report it. So it's not like she just came out of nowhere and said, "Oh yeah, he raped me, and I did see him pulling a body into
what,
into the cab."
What she previously said?
Yeah.
She saw him pull a body into the cab.
No. But she had reported him for raping her when like.
I just thought it were. I was just surprised that they went, how come you're only just coming forward about seeing him pull a body out? But then I was like, actually, reasoning is quite believable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, well, you didn't believe me before.
Because I'm terrified of him, and you didn't believe me what I told you last time, yeah.
It was very, do you know what? I didn't actually see it coming, you know, when he were looking at, like, one-way tickets to New York and stuff.
Yeah.
I actually didn't anticipate that they were going to use that again. Like, I didn't click to that at all, and I normally think
for Wofford Police, it makes sense. It does make sense.
I mean, it's wrong.
It's wrong, but it's a good job for Wofford Police. The best they're ever going to do.
Wrong person, but you know what?
Hey-ho. So do you
think they'll go down?
Well, I mean, I think that it seems pretty likely. I feel like we're at the end of Dean's story now. I don't think there's anything that he can say to get himself out of this now. I think they've set him up pretty well, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I don't see what else they can really do, actually. I mean,
Dean going down. I think if nothing else does, this is what's going to bring Shirley back. If Shirley is returning, this is what's going to bring her back when she hears about what's gone on.
I wonder if she would have been back already. But then having said that, had Shirley been back, Jean wouldn't have got as involved as she did with Jade, etc. Yeah. So we wouldn't have had all of this. So.
Yeah,
possibly. Hopefully she'll be back soon.
Talking of Jade, she's currently now living with the Slaters. Something that house needed was another child.
And because Shabnam, obviously, we're going to let Jade catch a plane on her own as well.
Well, do you think Jade's sticking around now, or do you reckon that she will end up going? Because at the minute, she hasn't actually got no reason not to now, has she? She should go now.
If anything, Jean and Harvey should take her to airport, which is what Shabnam had planned for her anyway, to travel on her own.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like you say, is it Shirley's going to return and then she'll go and live with Shirley to stay on the square, maybe?
Maybe. Who knows? I mean, it'll be a shame to lose Elizabeth Green because we both like her a lot, don't we? We think she's great.
I'd love to see Shabnam back, personally.
How good would
that be if we had a Shabnam return?
Yeah.
And then he's going to bring Zainab back as well.
Masood, everybody. Just bring the Masoods back. We'd love to see that. Yeah. So, yeah, good strong stuff this week, last week. But last week. Getting all very confused. Jet lag and all that sort of thing. You know how far Brighton is away. But this week, right? My goodness me. It feels like the show might soon run out of balls to knock out of the park, you know?
I keep thinking that, Rob, and then they do it again and then they do it again. And it's like, how?
It sounds like we're absolutely so creepy towards the show, but when they keep producing stuff like they do this, creepy towards the show, like, oh, we love you, EastEnders, we love you. But like when they're throwing stuff like this out every single, like most weeks, how could you not? Like, it's amazing.
It is one of the best eras, honestly, ever. I dare say.
I'm so happy that we do a podcast about EastEnders now.
Great timing.
Phenomenal stuff. Episodes like happen with Yolanda this week, you know, those sorts of era defining episodes. Each era might have like maybe one or two of those, but this show just keeps throwing out those sorts of episodes like every few weeks at the moment. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
So let's get talking about this week. We've got a few things to discuss before we get to Yolanda, including it's finally happened. Hurrah. I've been saying for months and months, any minute now. We finally have some movement with George and Cindy, so we've got that to discuss before we get to the incredible stuff that was Wednesday's episode. So let's crack on with this week's Albert Square After Dark. So let's talk about this week. We'll start off with George and Cindy and everything.
Get it out of
the
way, Rob. Come on.
I mean, I can't even pretend that, you know, I predicted this as though it was never going to happen. But my God, I can't believe it's taken this long for them even to kiss. They don't even slept together yet.
A little kiss.
Just a little kiss. Well, whereas George is at his lowest, you know, it was going to happen at some point. But my God, George is at a low point at the moment, isn't he? Right to the point where he is. We discovered, because a few weeks back, if you remember, he turned up all battered and bruised, and we sort of wondered what went on. Had he beaten Eddie up, or what had gone on? Turns out what he was doing was going to this sort of bare knuckle fighting club.
Let's
thing.
Just call it Fight Club, Rob. Fight Club. We don't know, do we? We're calling it Fight Club.
We're not supposed to know. You don't talk about Fight Club, remember, Ray? That's the first rule of Fight Club.
Well, we're calling it Fight Club for podcast episode purposes. It's
yes,
Fight Club.
For research purposes only. So, I mean, I kind of get this. So he is basically wanting to sort of get his anger out, but he also feels guilty about sort of Gloria, and is all sort of messed up with his emotions. So he's getting punched, and that sort of releases sort of emotions for him as well.
Well, I think when you think we were growing up, the way that he probably handled his emotions and was taught to by Eddie was do this kind
violent.
Of thing. So it makes sense that this is what he's turning to in his lowest moments. And it's what he's good at. He's getting rid of some... We know what they're like, Rob. They're always telling all these lads with all that pent-up frustration, go boxing. So he's just doing what's advised, didn't
he? Well, I mean, he goes to see Eddie in prison this week. Now, let's be fair here. 3 days of being in prison has not gone well for Eddie. I mean, I know he's an old man, but my God.
Well, when you think about it, though, because I was thinking this, because it was quite drastic, weren't
quite
it?
Dramatic change since
Eddie. Normally,
like,
when
we saw him in court, so the mess that he is in prison.
But he normally has his hair all combed back and sleeked back. He won't have any of those
real
kind
cream.
Of products in prison, will he?
No,
yeah, he won't have any of that.
Yes. So it's not going well for Eddie. He's obviously just discovered that his wife has died. So he
And
that as well. So all in all, not going well for Eddie. He rings George up and George goes to see him. And I think George needed to have that last final moment with Eddie. I don't think he thought it was going to go the way that it did, though. Eddie is a piece of pond life, okay? And I hope he dies horribly in prison. The character, you know, he's not a nice person.
When that conversation started with George there, didn't you think that Eddie was actually trying to turn to him because he's like somebody who knows Gloria as well as I did?
A little bit.
And then when George started saying all the stuff like, well, she's finally free of you, like his face just turned so quickly. Like, how amazing was that?
At first,
it were almost like he was turning to George because he wanted him to be there for him. And then as soon as George started saying some home truths like, you know, she wants to be cremated and not buried next to you, that were it, weren't it? Wow.
I didn't know that people in prison had anything to do with funerals on the outside.
I was wondering this.
Well, do you know what taught me that people in prison could go to funerals? EastEnders. I didn't know. I thought
I
that was it.
I was wondering how he could organise it there from prison. Like, surely he can't organise the funeral from prison.
Well, exactly. Like, presumably this is where sort of Uncle Gordon comes along and sort of does everything that Eddie wants to happen, you know, out on the outside, and Eddie sort of tells
him. Why don't Uncle Gordon just go and tell George and be like,
come
here
to
you are, meet us here.
Yeah, well, presumably Eddie can go to the funeral, you know, because Doc went to Nick's. So, like I say, literally EastEnders taught me that prisoners can go to funerals. I had no idea.
We've had a fair few prisoners on EastEnders go to funerals,
Eddie basically says to George, well, you can't come to the funeral. I don't want you anywhere near there. You basically killed your mum, so good luck with that. Good luck dealing with that for the rest of your life. See you later, boy. And just sort of like totters off. Oh, awful man. Awful, awful, awful human being. And obviously, George doesn't react well to this. And that's when we sort of end up back at the Fight Club. Now, a highlight of this storyline is Phil and George. Okay.
Yes, definitely.
If we were here last week, by the way, I would have been given my gold star to Phil for the scene last week where he sort of talked about Peggy, and just their relationship is just amazing. This is the best Phil has been for years. Like, these extra textures of friendship. He's not this sort of kind of stereotyped kind of overlord gangster that he was for quite a few years recently. You know,
I think Pat changed him, didn't she?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. But then he's got this friendship, and Phil hasn't had mates in so long. Like, this is this is the best relationship outside of a woman that Phil has had since the days of Gary and Minty, you know?
It's
really, really done wonders for Phil, this relationship. I love him and George together. I think they're such a fantastic pairing. Obviously, Steve McFadden and Colin Salmon are great actors, and they just bounce off each other beautifully. Yeah. It really, really works. I'm so happy about their relationship. It's great.
I love that Phil knew where to find him as well. Like, does Phil know about all these underground fight clubs?
Of course he does. Phil knows everything.
Is he there every week?
Anything that goes
on
underground, Phil knows all about. He knows, things he can learn about the London Underground is no business.
Underground, I'm there. Underground.
Underground, overground, wombling free. Phil Mitchell knows everything. but yeah, so he kind of, well, he follows George there, basically, doesn't he? Because he sort of senses that George is kind of wandering off. He's like, right, I need to follow you. I need to do my mate thing. And follows George to the fight club, which we're just going to call Fight Club. And George ends up getting knocked out. Now, I can imagine that this is a really painful thing for a boxer to sort of be made to feel old, you know, because they're sort of like, there's a younger people there and they're sort of knocking him out and like just taking bets on him. And that's not great for your self-esteem either, really, is it?
No, but then why is that younger person there in the first place? Do you think they're a disqualified boxer or something? Because what need have they really got to be there?
Yeah.
Also, George doesn't train like he probably did back in the day, so he ain't going to be as good, is he? Let's be honest. Like...
Well, you know, so it's... So what then ends up happening is that Cindy sort of gets wind that George is unhappy and sort of tries to drag all the information out of Phil. And she ends up going with Phil when George goes off to the fight club and they sort of just pull George away from it. And that sort of sets the path for this little kiss between Cindy and George. I mean,
we've been waiting on tenterhooks.
How has this taken so long? How has
it
taken
a kiss?
How has Cindy been able to resist having an affair for this long?
Yeah, that is so true. She's been back what, nearly a year?
She is a changed. She is a changed woman.
Yeah, I agree.
She really is. But it was only a kiss. So I mean, you know, now she's got the taste of George back on her lips again. I feel like it won't take long.
So basically, how it happened is as well, because, you know, George is at the Vic, Elaine's saying, go and have a duvet day, go and have a bath, this, that, and the other. Whereas Cindy knows, obviously Anna mentions it as well, that's not George, is it? Like, Elaine, she tries to help him, but she never can help him in the way that he needs it. Cindy knows George so well that she knows exactly what he needs. Like, when he ran off and Elaine went, well, I can't do anything, he's a grown man. Cindy's like, no, you need to go after him.
Yeah.
Right, I'll go after him then, because no one else is going to do it.
Well,
I love Cindy and George. I
know you
do.
I mean, let's not pretend that Cindy sort of was doing that completely out of the goodness of her heart. Like, oh, I'll follow George. Yeah, don't you worry. Don't you worry. I've got this, guys. Bearing in mind that when she went to follow George, at the time, she was supposed to be sitting down remembering Lucy.
So you think that Cindy just went after him fully with the intention, I'm going to take advantage of him while he's in a vulnerable state then?
A little bit.
I've got too much faith in Cindy, haven't I? I think she's a changed woman, Rob.
I mean, she's a slower woman in terms of getting what she wants these days. But
I did not see it like that at all. I genuinely
I think she does. I think she does 100% care for him. But I just feel that seeing as though going to see George when the rest of your family is there remembering your dead daughter. I mean, to be fair, in some ways, you have to sort of look at Cindy with regards to her kids and say, and almost think, how dare you even mourn your kids?
I mean, you know? I know what you mean, though, in that respect. Like, she shouldn't have left. You know,
for that long
memorial.
As well.
By the way, I was expecting a bit more from this memorial type thing, Lucy. I don't feel like,
although what can you do?
As big as I were expecting. I don't. Yeah, all right. Yeah, fair. I'm white.
I mean,
I was kind of expecting some candles to be lit and them all stood around talking about her in the square or something like that.
I think if I was to throw anything at that, I think it should have been, they should have made more of Bobby's situation during that.
True.
Because Bobby
was
sort of sat there all uncomfortably. Might have been nice to have a little bit of a moment between Bobby and Cindy. I know those two have sort of kind of put their issues to bed. But it might have been nice to sort of have a moment between Bobby and Cindy where, like, Bobby doesn't feel like he belongs there. Lucy doesn't feel like... Cindy doesn't feel like she belongs there for different reasons, and that might have brought them together a little bit. I get that there was a lot going on Wednesday's episode that they didn't really have time to properly full everything out of it, but, you know, it might have been nice.
That could have even been a better way for Cindy to have run off if she'd had some kind of argument with Bobby as well. Otherwise, it would just, like you say, it were a bit like, oh, shouldn't you be sticking around for you?
In Bobby's situation, it's probably the last place you want to be, right? Like, considering the situation. Bless him. Bless him. I mean, I'm glad that they acknowledged it, though. 10 years since since the greatest soap storyline of all time came along. Like,
and
it's...
who got it right, Rob? Who got it right? Do you remember 10 years ago, I got it right, Rob?
No, I don't remember that at all. No,
you were so annoyed at that. You are, I can't believe it was Bobby and you got it right.
Could you turn around to me and was just like, bet it's Bobby. I bet it's Bobby. I was like, don't be stupid, Ree. Just be quiet, Ree. Don't be stupid. Of course it's Bobby. And then it actually
I'm telling
Bobby.
You, it's Bobby. Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I'm glad that it was Bobby because we got Bobby as a result of it.
Yeah,
honestly. So I mean, how much now they've kissed, I've now got to say any minute now they'll be sleeping together.
I know, it's still not
an affair yet, is it? They've just had a kiss, you know, a tender little moment. We knew that was going to happen at some point, but they haven't started on like a full-blown affair as of yet. But that now this kiss has happened,
any minute now. No, I agree. Surely, because I mean, George is quite adamant that he's for Elaine, and I like George and Elaine.
Yeah,
but I just think George and Cindy are so much better suited.
I think they've done that. I think they've written that quite well because I don't think we're supposed to be looking at George and Elaine as this ideal couple. I think we're supposed to think they're a little bit unsuited.
Yeah,
and the fact that George just can't talk to Elaine properly, I think, is sort of illustrative of that. And the fact that him and Cindy could have conversations for hours about all sorts of stuff.
But they've got history as well. How long have Elaine and George been together? Maybe two years
that long.
Now.
Not that long.
So
not
she
doesn't
know him that well, real. I mean,
she doesn't know all the... I mean, every single time anybody from George's past turns up, Cindy has to go, oh, that's Uncle Gordon.
Oh, that's such and such.
That's his mum and dad. That's his mum and dad. All right, Elaine, that's his mum and dad. You haven't met them yet, have you? No, that's his mum and dad. So, and I think Elaine is very aware of that. I think that Elaine, every single time this happens, and Cindy has to sort of fill in the gaps, there's a moment where Elaine's like, oh.
Elaine has had moments with George, though, where she's had some good chats with him. But then it's in these particularly down times where Cindy seems to be the only one who can get through to him, isn't it?
Mm. I feel like Elaine has actually done very well in terms of not pulling Cindy's eyelashes out a lot of the time.
I mean, I love Cindy, though. Why do I like Cindy so much?
You
who
do
saw
like
that coming?
Hey, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Coming? So, throw your predictions in the comment section below. Tell us how long you reckon we'll be before we actually get to the full-blown affair. Any minute now. It'll happen. Right, ladies and gents, let's talk about Whitney and Brittany and Zachney. Okay, so brief little discussion, I think, now about Whitney. This is sort of just ticking along at the moment. I think we've got more to come with this next week. But at the moment, Brittany and Whitney are just sort of ticking along fine. Lauren is the main kind of bone of contention for Whitney at the moment, because she's literally just turning around to Whitney and going, are you mad? This isn't going to work, all right? How do you think this is just going to go unnoticed, that you bought this child for £2,000 or whatever it was, and no one's ever going to question where she's come from, what's happening, when you're trying to enroll her in a school or get her enrolled with a GP? How is any of this going to happen? Have you thought this through? And Whitney's like, shut up, Lauren, and then just sort of walks off.
Be right, Lauren.
So,
Lol's killer Lauren, didn't it? Whitney.
The thing is,
she's been a really good friend, actually.
She is, she's trying to be. But the thing is, even Brittany's taking the piss, where she's like, all right, mum. How does she think this is going to work? Just don't tell anyone. Because Zach still doesn't know what's gone on at this stage. Zach's still completely in the dark about the full story of Brittany and how she'd actually ended up with them. And I feel like Zach sort of thinks that Brittany will eventually go away at some point, and he's just sort of biding his time and sort of being like, there, Brittany, all right, yeah, cool. But I don't think that he thinks that Whitney is fully planning on just keeping hold of Brittany for the rest of her life.
I don't see, where do you think this is going? I told you my prediction, didn't I, this week?
Well, Whitney's exit is that she's going to go to prison?
Yeah.
Which is such a horrible exit for Whitney, I think.
I know, but where else is this headed? Because she's just bought a child for £2,000 and
really
then committing fraud.
You can get dogs are more expensive than that.
Yeah,
than
exactly.
That.
And then she's committing fraud going into a school and saying that she's a mum and getting her in. Yeah. Like,
not going to work.
Nah,
is it?
You can't.
Not going to work.
Have you seen any spoilers there?
I have seen one.
Spoiler alert, spoiler siren.
Keely is back next week.
Yes, that's what I've seen as well. So I don't know how that would tie in or into my thing.
And I'm sure Keely's all going to be for, you know, sort of going, oh yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, Keely's not going to cause any issues whatsoever, I'm sure. Yeah.
Maybe this is how Zach's going to find out.
I think so.
She's coming back. Yeah.
I think so, yeah. Zach and Lauren, I mean, there wasn't too much with them this week, but I think, do you reckon that's the future for Zach once Whitney's gone?
I think definitely they were trying to. They've had all these little looks, haven't they, and glances at each other. And I think it's going to be a culmination of Lauren is going to have kept two secrets from the both of them, and that's going to be what ends up breaking them up. So she's kept the secret about Zach trying to kiss her from Whitney, and Brittany not actually being fostered from Zach.
Yeah, you're right, Lauren. You're right. Great mate. Great mate. Well, I mean, what do you do, though, to be fair, in that situation? Like, what can you even do?
In God's honest truth, if I were Lauren, I'd have already told Zach. Because
would
he could, like she said, because he could get into trouble for it.
What, so you would have told, you'd have broken Whitney's trust, but you wouldn't have broken Zach's trust?
No, I'd have probably done both.
You'd have just done all of it. Like, sat down with a few drinks. Right, guys, have I got some tea to spill about you two?
Sit them both down and go, right, in fairness, like morally, both are wrong, but Zach could get in a whole lot more trouble about, you know, potentially being caught in buying a child than, you know, him trying to kiss Lauren.
Yeah, so to be fair, Zach really does have more of a right to know about this, doesn't it? Because, like you said, this could bring Zach down with them. And the police are not going to believe that Zach knew nothing about this.
Exactly. Because surely foster papers require both of them to be present at meetings and sign things and... Surely Zach knows that as well, though. Like, wouldn't they have had to come and reinspected the flat again?
Well, again,
another child coming.
I think Whitney is literally just sort of closing her eyes, putting her fingers in her ears, and just sort of blacking it, and just being like, "Everything will be fine." It definitely won't be fine. No. So I think more to come from this next week. So we'll talk about that then. But yeah, this is not going to end well for Whitney. I hope that she gets a happy ending in some regards. It's not going to be a happy ending, but I don't want her to go to prison, for God's sake. That would be horrible.
I'm sorry, but if Zach isn't leaving with her, I don't see how it's going to be a happy ending.
What if she just goes on the run with Brittany and Bianca and they just stroll off into
the sunset?
That's not
that
together?
Happy of an ending, though, is it?
At least she's not in prison. You know?
I don't think she's going to get a happy ending. I can't see this ending happily, can you?
How do you predict Whitney's ending approaching? Let us know in That Made Sense as a Sentence. What are words? What do you predict Whitney's ending is going to be? Stick it in the comment section below and we'll divulge all the secrets next week, I think, when Keely returns. Yes. Okay, one more story to go through before we get to Yolandi, and that is Jay. And a very unexpected, I think, return. I think I am surprised by the events of this week with Jay, aren't you? I did not think that Dean was ever going to be seen again. I'm pleased she's back, because I like. And the fact that Nadine is played by an actress with the best name in the entire industry, Jazzy Phoenix, is the best name ever. I don't know if it's real. I don't know if it's a stage name, but it's bloody marvellous. Jazzy Phoenix.
It is a great name.
I want to be called Jazzy Phoenix. If I'm ever cosplaying or I need to create a false name for myself, I'm going to call myself Jazzy Phoenix. I think it's an excellent name.
well, she might have got it. You know, what's it called? That thing that they're... Well, equity? No.
Equity, yeah.
It is equity, yeah. You might not. You might have to be Jazzy Phoenix the second or something, Rob.
Oh, that's true. That's even better. That's even better. It's like a number after my name. Jazzy Phoenix the second. That's me.
My feeling on this, I don't think they had an intention of bringing Nadine back. But then
they
had something in the pipeline with Ben. And obviously we know that was somewhat rushed getting rid of him.
Given
that little family unit something else to do.
Well, I think certainly Jay wasn't expecting to see her again, and he was expecting even less for her to be sitting there 26 weeks pregnant. Like, this must be the weirdest thing in the world for Jay, to be sitting there and trying to absorb. You have hired this woman as a prostitute because she looks like your ex who died from a brain tumour, who you wanted to have kids with at some point, but then the woman that you hired because she looks like Lola is now sitting there pregnant. That's bizarre. That must be so weird. How do you even compute that?
Well, go back in time and think about whether you put something on Ender it, mate.
Oh, well, there is that, yeah. So Jay turned around and saying, we only slept together once. Oh, no, it wasn't that, Jay. It was that time that me and you shared the same cup. We shared the same cup that time. That's how this has happened,
exactly.
Jay.
Yeah.
Honest to God.
I think it's fair for him to ask, though, by the way.
Oh, yeah,
definitely
totally. 100%.
Like, I think you're a bit like, oh, my God, how could you say that? Well, you know
100%.
What you were doing for a living? Come on.
And bear in mind, when him and Nadine were talking and meeting and doing everything, she had quite a few clients on the go because she was trying to pay for her college funds or something, wasn't she?
Yeah.
And she lived in that really nice flat. in the middle of Albert Square next to the tube station. That's not going to be cheap. So you're telling me that she didn't have lots of clients on the go whilst she was seeing Jay. Do we then think that she might be lying about this? No. Or about who the father is? I don't think she's lying about being pregnant, but you think that she's definitely right in saying that Jay is the daddy.
Yeah, why would she lie about it?
Well, there's a few theories going around the internet that she might be Emma's daughter.
Yeah, this happened at the time as well.
That's true. I've got to be honest, I'd be quite happy not to see Emma again.
I know we have a lot of believable things happen on the square, but I won't be down for that.
No.
Can we just leave them as like separate things and it just
if that now then does happen,
she looks like
sorry. yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's
nah. I mean, it feels like Emma. It's so bland.
Yeah, it's so bland. Anything's possible
that way. Yeah.
But I would like to know what exactly Nadine was getting out of telling Lexi. What was she? Why did
that
she
was
do that?
Well out of
why
order.
Did she do that?
Why did she do that? To be fair, I didn't understand that. Like, she's smart. She's studying law, isn't she? Like, surely she knows that that is not her place to say something.
Why would you
like
tell Lexi
child?
That? Of everybody in the world that you could have told that to, why would you tell a 10-year-old child?
Yeah, to be fair, that did not, that part does not sit right. So I don't understand that bit actually at all. I don't get why she did that. In fact, if I were Jay, I would be fuming with her for doing that.
Yeah. I'd be like, you can sod off, love, all right? Yeah, good luck with your child.
Poor Lexi.
That's horrible.
Yeah, that is horrible. Like, a mum's just died, a dad's just gone to prison, and then the prostitute that her stepdad was sleeping with after her mum died has come up and told her that she's pregnant.
Yeah. Not
God, that kid's made her tough stuff, isn't she?
I think you'd have to be living in Albert Square sometimes, you know. They've started throwing all the mad emotional stuff at Lexi. I mean, and her dad's just gone to prison. Like, Lexi's not had a great year, really, has she? Not the best year of any small child's life.
No.
So, I mean, presumably Nadine's going to be kicking around for a little bit now. I mean, I don't mind Nadine as a character. I quite liked her. But this was not a nice moment. And it makes me wonder why she did that. That's the thing. That's why I'm sort of wondering, like, why tell Lexi? What were you...
That is a good point, yeah.
What could you possibly get out of doing that? So there's got to be some sort of ulterior motive going on there, surely.
I did see somebody online say that they thought she wanted money out of Jay. And then I thought, yeah, but with all the clients she's probably had in the past, why would she go to Jay?
Why him?
That well off. Yeah,
exactly. Why Jay? I mean, obviously...
I just believe that it is his. I don't know.
I mean, the thing is that the dates, you know, again, like, I've worked the dates out. But, like, really? Like, so what, Jay was the only person it could possibly be? I mean, maybe Jay was the only one that wasn't stupid enough to put something on it when they actually slept together, but...
I thought she said that he was the only one that she'd actually slept with at the time. Like,
yeah.
She said he was the only client that she had at the time, I think.
Which, again, I struggle to believe.
Like,
I do struggle to believe that Jay was the only client that she had at the time. But if she said, if she says it and that's what we're... And it's actually true, then I guess that's the information we're given. But I think there's something else going on here. I really do. And I would not be surprised to see, at the end of the week an Emma return. I mean, the thing about Emma is... I don't think she massively worked in terms of what she was doing. She got brought in, derailed.
Something went a bit weird.
It absolutely did. Yeah. I mean, I think Patsy Kensit got ill at some point. So they had to kind of rewrite it quite quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what happened. And then she sort of came back and randomly slept with Phil and then disappeared again. So
definitely going to come back with a baby as well.
Oh, God, not another Mitchell child, please.
Phil's managed to get two women in the 50s pregnant. Why not make
super
it
sperm.
Number 3?
Super sperm, that man.
Well,
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see how this goes. But yeah, quite the shock of a Jay. In the meantime, him and Honey are busy training for the marathon. That whole thing is going to be next week in this big old special episode, I think, where they're actually filming around the marathon and it's all real because they've run the marathon in real life. So that's all going to be kicking off. So I'm kind of looking forward to that because that's going to be very, very different and quite exciting, quite exciting to watch. And the way, I mean, God knows how they do that. I wouldn't even begin to be able to understand how you logistically manage to film a soap opera whilst the London Marathon is going on. That's going to be crazy.
Maybe it's just going to be clips of them running in the marathon
or something
and then film bits around it or something. I don't know.
Probably.
You think, yeah. Because if they're actually running the marathon, they can't be... doing loads of acting at the same time.
I thought so.
And if they do, well done.
Fair play. Yeah, we'll see where that goes next week. Right, ladies and gents, this is the moment that we've all been looking forward to discussing, I think, in a weird way. Let's talk about Yolandi. So, 2008, Ree, I want to take you back to that moment. A character was axed in 2008, okay? And that character was Yolande Truman. They had said that they had run out of stories for her. Sorry about that, but, you know, that happens in the world of soap. We've run out of storylines for that character. We'd like to take Patrick in a new direction. It happens, okay? But then, 2022, 23 time, Chris Clenshaw decides to bring Yolande back. And you realise exactly what we have been missing out on all of these years later. Angela Winter, man, like, wow. If you were to put Angela Winter and this story in a 9pm drama, about 10 million people will have watched it. Angela Winter would be the most famous woman on earth, and she would be absolutely raking in all the awards, right? Like,
yeah, definitely.
100%. It drives me crazy that people ever dare to look down on the genre of soap when it throws out stuff like that. It really, really drives me mad.
Yeah, she's just being incredible. I mean, she's incredible at playing Yolande anyway, but then this week with this storyline.
Wow. Can you believe that she was ever axed? Like, that's absolutely mental, isn't it? Like, and by far, this is the strongest Yolande has ever been. Like, and that doesn't very often happen, that you bring a character back. It's sometimes what happens is that that character is a little bit of a cheap imitation of what they were in their previous stint. This is the strongest Yolande has ever been by a million years. Like, it's just incredible. I'm so happy she is in the soap. And she has front and foremost status there as well. She's not just Patrick's wife. She is her own character with her own life, with her own story. And she is just stunning. So let's talk about this week. Very, very difficult watch this week. Obviously, we knew that the pastor was going to do something horrible at some point. And my God, did he manage that? Because the fundraiser this week, Yolande's all nervous. Patrick returns. Delighted to see Patrick back.
Oh, brilliant.
Patrick and Yolande, I think, are one of my favourite couples on the in the show. I love the pair of them together so much. They are fantastic. And I can't wait, actually, for Rudolph Walker's time in the spotlight with this storyline when he finds out what's actually happened.
Oh, I don't think he's going to find out.
Oh, he will. He will. Of course he will. Of course he will. Why wouldn't he find out? Why would you lose that side of the story?
Because of what they shared with one of the other characters. I didn't want
to talk about it
now, but because Yolande didn't want him to kick off, because I think that's why we saw that little bit of him with Jack when he was having a go at Jack.
Yeah.
Yolande's scared that he's going to try and really hurt Pastor Clayton and then in turn injure himself somehow. Or like she said, have another stroke from the shock kind of thing, you know? Yeah. Got the impression he won't find out.
Oh, he 100% will find out. Because I think it's just soap, isn't it? Of course he's going to find out. He's going to find out and it's going to be awful. He may well have
I don't think it'll be any time soon if he does.
Well, let's talk about it.
I could be wrong. It might be. Hopefully it's next week, because I hope that he does find out for Yolande's sake. But,
well, I mean, the events leading up to it are the fundraiser's happening. Yolande's sort of all nervous about it. This fundraiser is like a really huge event that she wants to get absolutely right. The pastor is sort of kind of, you know, really kind of niggling her throughout the week, going, especially when Patrick returns, he's clearly getting quite pissed off about the fact that she might want to spend some time with her husband who's been away for months. So there's that sort of darkness growing with him throughout the week's episodes.
Also trying to plant the seeds in Patrick's mind that something might be a bit untoward happening between them. And I couldn't help but think it's because he knew what he was planning on doing. And then he could, even maybe Patrick won't believe Yolande if he goes, well, I saw, you know, things between you and the pastor this week.
Yeah, I mean, that is another possibility that Patrick might react like that, you know. But
I can't
think,
imagine that, though,
I don't think
Patrick.
He would.
I think he would believe Yolande. Yeah.
Never in a million years. But, you know, we never know how
it's
going to
go. But that might have been Pastor Clayton's thinking when he was trying to do it as well.
So the event arrives, and Yolande is sort of, you know, trying to make everything right. She wants it to be perfect. She's got everybody in to try and help her out, selling raffle tickets and everything. Denise and Chelsea are on a cake stall. Chelsea's eyeing up young pastors from across the room. I wonder if that's going to go anywhere, by the way. That seemed a bit of a random thing to throw out of nowhere. Levi.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, well, I did that get thrown into the mix.
We'll see what goes
maybe
on
there.
Maybe
to show that she was distracted whilst she was there. I don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe. But the thing is with this, that Yolande, the idea was, I think, to sort of make Yolande seem really sort of nervous about what's going on. She wants it to be perfect. So then she goes into this little side kitchen. She's sort of setting stuff up, and the pastor follows her in, locks the door behind him, and sexually assaults her.
I actually feel sick with you saying it. That's how...
It was horrific. Yeah. The way that it was portrayed. Let's just talk about Lauren Clee for a moment, the writer of that episode. Now, Lauren Clee has been on the writing team for a fair few years, okay? But mm-hmm. I think that the episodes that she has thrown out in this era have been phenomenal, okay? Mm-hmm. I always go on about, like, oh, I'm so excited Simon Ashton's writing an episode this week. Like, Lauren Clee, man, like, whenever I see a Lauren Clee's going to write an episode, then I know I'm in for a good, I'm in for an incredible time on, like, half hour
screen
of TV.
Wise,
yeah, like, she writes so honestly, I think that's the thing, she writes unflinchingly, like, you know, looking back on the George, Eddie, Gloria six-hander that we had just a few weeks back, you know, that other era-defining episode that happened just a few weeks ago. That script was just so brutal and truthful and honest and mature, and this was exactly the same.
And I think the other thing, not only does she have depth when she's writing them, but they're also really realistic as well.
Yeah, really,
that's
really.
It's quite a hard
yeah.
thing to do, really.
It's not easy.
It?
Yeah. No. Yeah, she is incredible. Long may she stay on EastEnders, because... Mm-hmm. This is the thing about soap. Like, you have to sort of churn out so many episodes a year, and then you've got someone like Lauren Clee, like, writing a script like that, which again would be 9 PM drama material that millions and millions and millions of people would watch more than they would the soaps. And it's such an unfair.
Do you think, because a lot of Yolanda's reaction to stuff afterwards, she didn't really say much. A lot of it was, there wasn't any dialogue.
It was all in the performance. Yeah.
Do you think that Lauren Clee wrote in all of the stage directions really particularly? Like, do you think she had the vision in her head so that she could write it down?
Yeah,
for
I mean,
Winter
I think
to...
I would imagine that the way it's done is you write each scene quite specifically. Then the director will then look at that and say, right, this is how we're going to block that, and that's how you know. And then Angela Winter will do her thing, so it all sort of kind of is mixed together in a really kind of.
Yeah,
perfect way,
birth.
Basically. Yeah. So the assault happens, and this pastor! I swear to God, I want bad things to happen to him. I wanted to reach through the screen and throttle the bastard.
Honestly,
I really,
it
did.
Just makes me feel sick just even thinking about it all. The fact that he then went back in after to make it look like he'd not been there. Denise walked in straight away after it as well.
Yeah.
And he did it so blatantly in a building full of people.
But this is because...
That was part of it, surely, right?
Well, yeah, completely. I imagine that's part of the kick that he got out of it. But also, this is the result of him having years and years of practice of doing this, it transpires. But yeah, I mean, the way that he just kind of strolled in quite soon after it had done, just to, probably A, to check that she wasn't saying anything to Denise, because it wasn't like she was going to say anything with him stood right there. And B, just to throw that extra little jar, do you need another pep talk? I want such terrible things to happen to this man. I cannot even tell you.
Yeah.
The sad thing is, though, we're probably going to have to wait quite a while for anything remotely to happen to him. And this
I don't
is
think
what,
anything will.
This is... Well, this... That frustration is what I think was the primary sort of focus of what actually transpired. Because what this is all actually really about is... sort of sexual abuse and sexual assault being able to go on for years and years and years, sort of unchallenged. You can't stop it from happening. It's just, it's horrific. Okay. And Yolandi kind of is just wandering around all sort of dazed and confused, goes home, realizes she's had no work and face Patrick right now, runs across the square again, ends up in the laundrette. And Elaine sort of sees her go in there and follows her in. And Elaine is the first person to be told about what's gone on. Fascinating thing with Elaine. We'll talk about Elaine in a minute, because I think that's actually going to be quite a key character point for Elaine moving forward. I'm interested to sort of see what your thoughts are on that. But what we then get are flashbacks. And I'll be totally honest, at first, I wasn't sure that it was working. I was like, I don't know whether that... But then... the victims keep coming and coming and coming. And then you're like, right, okay, that's...
Now I get it.
So dark, so brilliant, so clever, well done, and so utterly, utterly, devastatingly heartbreaking. Like, amazing. Yep. So we meet... Well, we don't meet... Like, Dolores, Sarah, Rachel, Delia, Emma, and now added to the list is Yolande, all victims of Pastor Gideon Clayton's sexual assault slash rape.
Mm.
I mean, what do you... I mean, what are your thoughts when the flashback started happening?
Like, I think each flashback presented us with another issue as to why women won't report something,
yeah.
or as to why when they do report something, you know, nothing ends up happening anyway. So they, you know, so like the first one, Dolores, she tells a friend who basically tries to imply that she's having some kind of mental breakdown and in psychosis.
Oh, have you been ill? Have you been ill?
Well, you believe that. Yeah, because...
Yes, Oshra, that cold I had is absolutely playing havoc with my imagination.
Because the
yeah.
pastor is so good appearing to be such a, you know, well-respected member of the community that why would you believe, you know, little old Dolores who's saying something like that, and he was a young man as well, let's not forget. So she's thinking, oh, you've got an active imagination, have you, Dolores?
By the way, I mean, I don't know how they did young Pastor Clayton, by the way, because clearly the same actor. How did they do that?
It was so... It was all about his hairline, I think.
Yeah, how did they do that?
Hairline.
That was amazing.
Yeah, it was really good, wasn't it? From afar, I'm like, oh, God, he looks about 20-odd years younger. Well done.
Mad.
Well done, hair and makeup.
I don't know whether that's him now, and... The Clayton that we know now is the made up version, or whether it's the other way around. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just
I think they just managed to make him look younger.
I want whatever they did. I want. So it's like amazing.
I think they made him look younger. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the Dolores stuff, I drove me crazy because it's just like, will you listen to your friends, please? Like, oh, what, your friend is often in this state when I mean, I get it. All right, this is the frustrating part of it, and this is why women don't come.
And
forward,
it might not be a friend; it might have just been somebody at that group who were like, oh, little old Dolores is saying this.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And again, even me saying little old Dolores, that is belittling an older woman, isn't it? Even that phrase that I'm using, like that, immediately.
I mean, this is the key part of it. This is very specifically older women that he goes for. Because,
yes, exactly.
And
yeah,
bringing, and I think this is actually such an amazing thing to bring up, like the sexual assaults on older women. The only other show that at the minute I can remember doing that was Emmerdale when Lisa Dingle got raped. And I remember that being really, really hard hitting because, again, it wasn't something that you were particularly used to seeing, like represented.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this pastor is now going around, he's basically a serial rapist, sexual assaulter. Okay, whatever. So we go from Dolores and then to Sarah. Now, Sarah's thing drove me crazy as well because she's literally sat there having this conversation with this vicar, this priest, and is basically told, okay, well, you can have the next few Sundays off. He's leaving soon anyway. And in the meantime, let's just say a prayer.
If he believed her, he would have tried to do something more. Because you'd at least bring up the concern, right?
I just think, do you know what? I think he did believe her, but I just don't think he wanted the reputation of his church to be... I just don't think he wanted the reputation of his church tarnished particularly. I think that was his main issue. So, yeah, you stay away for the next few Sundays. That's that sort of situation dealt with.
He'll be gone by the time you come back.
We'll say a prayer. Let God know we're thinking about him in this scenario, and then everything will be fine. Like, it's crazy. The other one I wanted to really kind of discuss was Delia. Who
went to the police.
Actually went to the police. And I'm sort of fascinated by the perspective of the female police officer at that point, okay? Because she comes in, this is woman to woman, talking to a woman who is sat there and you saying, oh, well, I believe you. I believe that you have been raped. That's not what's the debate here. We just haven't got the evidence. I'm kind of curious about how you do that to, like, do you know what I mean? Like, woman to woman, how that conversation, that must be... a horrible conversation to have, but how do you do that? You know, like when you know that sexual assaults and rapes are so difficult to convict, like that's awful.
I guess she kind of, like a female officer kind of has to in that position because there clearly wasn't enough evidence and it's awful.
Yeah.
And it's horrendous. And women's word just unfortunately isn't enough. So this was brought up with Yolande's concern, you know, when Elaine was saying to her, you know, you should go and get examined because that would be the most vital piece of evidence, right? You've, like, here's the proof. But why would a woman who's just had that happen, Well, no, possibly not. And then you're putting yourself through being examined in that area that you don't want anyone to be going near right now. Yeah,
because you've just been violated there. So why would you, like, that's the last thing you want is to be sort of examined there again. Like,
but that's the only proof that you're going to have.
Yeah. Like, it's just, but then, I mean, look at this stat. Okay. So 67,938 rapes were recorded by police between October 2022 and September 2023. By the end of that 12-month period, charges had been brought in just 2.4%, which is 1,631 of those 67,000-odd rapes. Charges being brought. In other words...
And that's just charges. That's not necessarily being sentenced properly.
That is just 2 in 100 rapes recorded by police between October 22 and September 23 resulted in someone being charged that same year, let alone convicted. That is the key thing of the key focus of this story, I think. And the question, I mean, this question then goes outside, you know, an episode of EastEnders. Like, how the hell do you fix that? That is clearly broken. That doesn't work. So what do you do? Like, you can write an amazing episode of a soap opera and demonstrate that that's the case. But like, how do you fix that? It's just horrific.
There's got to be some way of going, like, of making sure these people are getting convicted without the evidence that is required. I mean, could you even go as far as, you know, if people end up needing therapy in years, could you use that in a court case and go, well, why would they unnecessarily go to therapy to discuss something for so long or something like that, you know? Mm. What, like, I'm just trying to think what else there could be other than this physical evidence that they supposedly need. Oh, but again, in like Yolandi's case, you can totally see how it would be that she wouldn't be believed. You've had all the rumours being started.
Yeah.
By Agatha and the others there. So then they'd all go, oh, well, no.
Agatha's going to be a problem. I'm telling you now, Agatha is going to be a problem moving forward. Because
I don't think anything's going to move forward. I think Yolanda's just going to try and shove it to the back of her brain and not do anything.
But then
that's the impression I'm getting.
What's the story there, though, I think, is what you've then got a question.
Seeing how it's going to affect Yolanda.
And then, but then Elaine knows about this as well. Okay,
that's true.
Now, this is a really, I think this was actually a really key moment for Elaine's character, because actually, there's been a lot of criticism about Elaine, and I'm telling you now, everything that has been written with Elaine has been 100% deliberate. Okay,
yeah, like, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
not a badly written character. That is a very flawed, really nicely layered character that we simply are not used to seeing in charge of the Queen Vic. Okay, we are used to seeing our Queen Vic landladies like this really strong sort of, like, nothing can touch them, nothing can faze them sort of person. And then you get someone like Elaine, who actually, in many ways, has great difficulty in dealing with emotional conflict. Okay, and the fact that she and Linda have such a difficult relationship now, that needs to be dealt with even a two-hander one day, by the way, because those two will knock it out of the park, and that's where that should be heading in terms of climax. But to see Elaine sitting there and witnessing Yolandi literally fresh out of being sexually assaulted, crying and shaking, what you're looking at there is a woman who is sitting there realizing that is what my daughter felt like, and I haven't been there enough for her.
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely deliberate that it was Elaine.
100%.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Brilliant that it was Elaine. I loved that. And I'm really intrigued to sort of know where this takes Linda and Elaine's relationship from here. Like, does that alter things slightly? Is she going to try and be there more? Is she going to... And then what does she do? Or is this more going to be about, yeah, I've already screwed that up with Linda. In some ways, that's unsolvable.
So I'll try and help.
I'll try and help Elaine. I'll try and help Elaine out. So how do I... Yolandi out. So how do I manage that? Yeah, Elaine. So how do I do that? What do I... Do I say... Because when she said, I need you to promise me that you won't say anything, the way that Elaine said, I promise, was like, she didn't want to say it. It just sort of kind of fell out of her mouth. She said it quickly. She said it like she didn't want to say it.
She was saying it because she knows that that's what Yolanda needed to hear in that moment.
She didn't want
to cause her any more distress, did she? Because she was already clearly distressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is where I'm interested in where this is all going to go, because it was all so fresh in that moment with Yolanda. She was, like she kept saying, she was still in shock. I mean, did a part of you not laugh or anything, but it took me a bit out of it when Elaine White dropped to get you a cup of tea or something. I'm thinking, of course she don't want a cup of tea, but I get why you're saying it.
Yeah,
also, that's a very British thing to say when somebody's in distress. Can I go and get you a cup of tea?
Tea solves everything. No, but I know what you mean, but that is that's just a coping mechanism, isn't
it's
it?
It's also like a grounding technique in a way, you know, getting someone a cup of tea. It gives them something to focus on.
Well, do you know what? The best thing I ever saw of tea being the way that the British deal with things was in a drama called Years and Years by Russell T. Davis. Okay. And the idea basically is that the world is ending. All right. So there's a nuclear attack or something going on. And it's all very much focused on this one family and how they're looking at what's going on around them. And the grandma, whilst all the news is like basically saying the world is ending, she's in the kitchen sort of making tea because that's how you just deal with the situation. So I get that completely. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's going to be fascinating going forward. I'm really looking forward to sort of seeing Elaine's part of this. And like you say, perfect character to sort of bring into this storyline like that. I can't wait to sort of see Elaine's next moves from this. But Yolande, I mean, the poor woman. This has completely and utterly broken her. I don't know how she then goes... I don't know how she deals with it from here on in. Yes, you're right. She is going to try and keep this to herself for as long as she possibly can. But that can surely only last so long.
Do you know a realisation I had whilst I was watching it was when, you know, Yolande's talking through to Elaine everything that's been happening in the past few weeks, and you can see Yolande seeing things click, and it's like, oh, did you not see in the moment that he was punishing you, Yolande? Now you're seeing that he was punishing you when you spoke up about, you know, feeling uncomfortable. And it was only when Elaine said to her, he's been grooming you, that I was like, oh my God, I didn't even realise that myself.
He's an expert.
That she was able to look at it so factually, even in that moment where Yolande were being emotional and Elaine's going, I groomed you. And she's going, I'm a grown woman. I can't be groomed. No, he did.
No, you can. Yeah.
And
it's
just showing, I mean,
and actually,
he's a pastor, but he's a man in position of power, isn't he? And, you know.
And I think if anything, Yolande felt, even if it was possible, even more violated at that moment because she'd been manipulated for so long in order to get to this point.
Yeah. Because even I didn't click that he's had this planned all along. But then when you see all the other victims, it's like,
that history of the victims of Pastor Clayton, I mean, that's such a genius way of doing this. And no soap's ever done it like that before.
No, and it just shows all the elements as to why Yolande may not go ahead and do anything to me.
And how it's so easy for him to be, it's like they answered any questions about why soap keep doing this. And this is a big thing at the moment, actually, as well. Like, you see a lot on Twitter when this sort of storyline gets announced, quite often what you will see is people saying, oh, what, sexual assault again? Like, people are obsessed with it, which is so infuriating, because this is why this has to be constantly be happening. All right,
because
this
it's always happening in real life.
It's always
people.
Happening. Oh, sorry,
stop burying your head in sand if you think you're seeing it too much.
It's just a bit difficult for you. Sorry, but let's do better, and then maybe it won't have to happen. You know, it's as simple as that, really.
What was that statistic? 1 in 4 women have had sexual assault or rape happen to them.
Oh, something like insane. Like 1 in 4 women will experience sexual assault or rape at some point in their life.
It needs to keep being spoken about. I mean, slightly going off topic, talking about another soap, but Coronation Street did it recently with Amy Barlow, and that was a whole conversation
about
consent.
And to me,
it was really obvious that it was non-consensual, but there were people online still saying that it was consent, and it's like, this is why this still needs to keep happening then, isn't it?
Well, even in EastEnders, the consent question was raised with Ben, you know, because he'd been...
Yeah, of course,
So there's so many different sort of facets to it and so many sorts of layers to it. And you sort of wonder, like, how can you possibly complain that this is something that is discussed too much? You know, shut up. Give your head a wobble, for Christ's sake. Like, and long may these sorts of storylines continue until something changes. Simple as that.
No, I agree.
So, I mean...
quite hard to talk about this, isn't it?
It is, like, because at the end of the day, we're here to talk about EastEnders, but like, this is what this is supposed to do, though. This is the whole point. It's supposed to generate conversation. This is supposed to actually raise awareness and get people talking about it, and it managed that. And I will have to say, I have seen nothing but absolutely universal praise for Wednesday's episode. Like,
as
nobody
deserved.
Yeah, it was just absolutely phenomenal stuff. This era just completely is just knocking every single ball thrown out of the park, you know. And you can give me the Six storyline, or, you know, and I love the Six storyline, you know. It's camp, it's soapy, it's ridiculous, it's fun to watch, you know. And that is why I think this era has been so successful, because you have you have a silly story like that. And I don't mean silly to mean disdainful,
no, I know
but
saying.
You know what I mean. It's a it's a silly old soap murder story, essentially, where you put your most iconic female characters in different colored dresses and you let them do their thing. Okay, and that works perfectly. But then you sort of balance it with the real hard hitting life issues like this, and that's how you run a soap. All right.
Yeah.
Just. Perfect. Perfectly done. And Angela Winter, my God, what a performance she gave this week. I mean, there are not words to describe that performance. It was just absolutely
even down to,
mind-blowing.
You know, when she was stood on the stage and he had his arm around her, like, how can you do that? I actually feel like my eyes were opened a bit. I mean, I've mentioned before that TV show I saw, I May Destroy You. Michaela Coel, if you've not seen it, it's good. It's very much on this topic. And even that little bit of him putting his arm around her, because do you know what? To some extent, you still go, is he doing all this? Even I was questioning it. Has it all been deliberate? Has this all been, him working up to this moment? And then I saw that and I was like, there's no way that he's not been trying to do this all along. And then you see all the other women's reaction, then you hear Elaine saying the grooming.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how, is he now just going to disappear out of the community then, Pastor Clayton? Is he just going to go now that he's done it? Is that something that he's done in the past?
Yeah, sort of just does it and then basically runs away.
And then he moves on and goes to his new victim.
Possibly,
also, we were talking about how his wife was quite young. Like, he had a very young wife. Mm. And I think even that's deliberate, because obviously his victims are older women.
Yeah.
So, and if they do ever come forward,
have you
it's
seen
kind
my
of
wife?
Implied that, why have you seen my wife? Like, she's really young and look at her.
Yeah.
It's another way for people to go, okay, Dolores, you sit down, Mom.
His life. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at this day whether he even believes in God. You know, it's just
totally,
he's completely
and
utterly created this subterfuge life for himself, where he has a defense and an alibi at every corner. And that's, I think, is another key factor of the fact that, you know, this is a guy who is heavily involved in the church. All right. And that's somebody that you put in a position of trust. That's somebody who is looked up to by the community. That is somebody who. That's somebody where the type of victims that he seems to enjoy having will flock around him. Like, that is a man who knows exactly what he is doing, and he knows exactly how to make it happen, and he knows how to keep himself out of the limelight.
So this is what I was wondering, because at first, when we saw Dolores, I was like, so has he got a type? Is it like a strong, independent woman? Is that the type of woman that you go, like, older woman.
Older,
that he goes for? But then we saw Rachel, who was a lot more vulnerable. So I was like, so it's not. Is it just that he picks on the people and thinks, how can I get away with it best kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, let's be fair as well. Each of these women we saw for a grand total of about 2 minutes, and he will have got to know these women, each and every one individually. Mm. You know, the whole thing with Yolandi, he knows her backstory. He knows he knows about her home life. He knows how dedicated she is to the church, and you know, and he knows. He basically works out how she will react to what he is going to do to her, okay? And if he doesn't think that he'd be able to get away with doing it to her, then he will do it to somebody that he definitely does know. You know,
so do you think, because, like, obviously a few of the women he'd actually raped, do you think he thought, I'm deliberately going to assault Yolandi because just in case she might
report it
and there's not as much evidence?
I don't know. Maybe a timing thing. I'm not sure.
Because Yolandi said, it was one minute, didn't she?
Yeah. I mean, he wouldn't have had time to do anything. I don't know if he'd have had time to do
in the circumstance
as much as he wanted to, probably, in that scenario. You know, it's tricky. But yeah, we'll see where this goes. You could be right that this is actually going to be a case of the man getting away with it, which the thing is, that's going to be the frustrating thing to watch, because that's, you know, we want to see
more realistic,
that.
Though,
it would be. That's the sad thing, you know, and that's how Dean got away with it, you know. And that's why we've now had to send Dean for prison for something he didn't do, and that feels like suitable justice.
The thing I wondered, please, if anyone does know, let us know this, the answer to this in the comments. So obviously we've seen, was it Delia who were reporting it to the police? Then let's say Yolandi did come forward and tell the police. Would they go, well, hang on, we've had two women making two separate claims. Like, let's say you had six women come forward to the police with six separate claims, but none of them had any evidence. Would the police then have to go, well, come on, there's six women here coming forward. We've got to try and do something. But how would that work?
We don't know if there's physical evidence. We don't know if all of those women went to the police. All right, we know that Delia did, is what I'm saying.
Because I know Delia did, but hypothetically, possibly, if six women did go forward, would they then have to act? Would there be like is it like a class action? You know that you can do where you have several people. Does that work in these kind of instances? Because surely that this has happened before.
Well,
I reckon it just come down to evidence and
something needs to happen. That's basically the message of this storyline, is something needs to bloody happen, because those stats are wrong and unacceptable. And that is what this storyline is about. And you know what? I've seen so many people criticising the fact that Dean was kicking around for so long. If anything, Dean being there, completely unrelated to this story, sort of strengthens the point of this story so much more, doesn't it?
Yeah, it actually really does. Yeah, definitely. Amazing. This is why I'm wondering if Pastor Clayton's going to be around, or I think it's all going to depend on whether she tells Patrick, and I don't think she's going to.
Not yet. I think she will at some point. Patrick will find out. What I think is going to happen is that I think that Denzel will find out something has gone on, and steroid-infused Denzel will make it worse for a little while as well. I think something's going to happen.
And Denzel was
there, so maybe
he'll have gone, why did Andy run off? Yeah, because she just ran off stage, didn't she?
Yeah, and he will get some more sort of internal guilt. Oh, something else I failed to protect Yolandi from. You know, all of that. There's all the different sort of soapy elements to this that they can then go off in different directions and do, understandably. But the key component of this story is Yolandi and how she's going to personally, internally deal with it. The fact that Elaine now knows how she's going to deal with the information, given what's going on in her own life with her own daughter, there's a lot more to come out of this. I think I hope that Clayton gets justice for this, but
I think the
stats say that he won't, and that's the sad fact of the matter, and that's the sad factor of the story. And I think the fact that this has happened to Yolandi makes this so much worse, because Yolandi is a character that the audiences love. Like, everyone loves Yolandi, you know, and for to do this to her makes the audience so much more angry.
And she's a very strong female character as well. So to see this happens, just shows that it can happen to anyone as well, doesn't it?
And that's the other point of the story as well.
Yeah.
Well done, EastEnders. You did it again. That was absolutely spectacular stuff.
And very hard. I don't know if we mentioned how difficult it was to watch.
So hard to watch.
At one point, I did think, like, I might have to turn this off, it's too heavy. And they're like, can't I do a podcast about it? I'm like, keep watching.
I make you do, Ray, honestly. It's awful, isn't it?
But in the best way possible, we're saying it was a difficult watch.
A complimentary.
That's how well it was done.
And it was supposed to be, all right? It was supposed to be a difficult watch, and they managed that, and it was just absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Well done to everybody involved. That was absolutely perfect soap. Not even perfect soap, perfect British drama at its best. Well done. And if you think, Ray, that I am not infusing the rule if we can give two gold stars to the same person this week, then you're off your head.
Well, you mean we are allowed to this week?
Oh, we are 100% allowed to.
I'm going to tell you to do
one. You can nanas, you were going to say. Two gold stars to Yolandi, I think, are we saying?
Yeah.
That doesn't even feel like enough of a plaudit. Like,
can we give her four? Can we four. Give her a double gold star?
Yeah, give her two gold stars each. There you go. It's our podcast. We can do what
double
we like.
Double gold stars.
There you go. So four gold stars to Yolandi this week.
Definitely.
Fair.
Come on.
Fully fair. Amazing. Right, ladies and gents. Final section of the podcast. We've got a little bit of news, which also is quite sad news, looking at it. And then we'll finally finish with some comments from you guys. Right, before we get on to your comments, we have had some news this week and I am gutted about it. Spoiler alert, siren, an exit has been announced. According to the Metro and Stephen Patterson, Bobby Beale star Clay Milner-Russell has quit EastEnders. The actor who betrayed the fifth iteration of Bobby made the decision himself in a bid to pursue other roles, according to reports. A spokesperson for the BBC has told Metro, "We can confirm that Clay will be leaving EastEnders later on this year, and we wish him the best for the future." Apparently, the door has been left wide open, as well it should. I am gutted about this.
Well, I don't wish him the best for the future. I want him to come back and be Bobby.
In fact, we don't wish him much. We don't wish him any success, so he has to come back to EastEnders.
Yes,
exactly. I tell you what, though, we'll be lucky if that happens because he's an amazing actor. He really is.
I'm just gutted. I'm actually gutted. I've really warmed to this version of Bobby, definitely.
Do you know what I would say about him is that sometimes we've spoken about recasts in the past, and it sometimes takes a little while to get used to them.
Mm.
I remember his first appearance. I was like, "Yep, sold. That's Bobby. Perfect.
Yeah, that's Bobby. Yeah, here we go.
100%.
Nice to meet you, Bobby Beale again.
Yeah, that's the new
Bobby.
Do you
know
Bobby?
What
Perfect.
I have seen people say about this online? Does this mean that there's no room for Jane to make a comeback? Is that where he's going to go? Is he going with Jane?
I feel like if they weren't going to be able to get Laurie Brett back as Jane, then the Bobby story was only ever going to be incomplete, because I feel like they needed Jane to sort of really tie that up. We might be lucky and get her for a little bit of a cameo for the exit. I don't know. That would be amazing if we can get that. But yeah. I feel like Jane, there's much more for Jane to be doing than just that, unfortunately. Mm. So that's a real shame. I would say, I think that Bobby's not had a huge amount to do over the past few years, like for a little while, actually. So it's a shame. It really is a shame that, but if that's just what happens, you know, people say, do you know what? Okay, I'm done here for now. Let's go and see what else is out there.
For now. He's going
to
be back.
For now, please. I hope so. Well, I really, really hope
so. Kind of hope, but yeah, I feel like much more could have been made
about the Bobby and Cindy stuff, maybe. I feel like that was...
Maybe that's how it's going to go. Maybe that's how he's going to leave. They're going to go, do you know what? I thought we're all right living with you, Bobby, but I'm not. And he's going to go, all right, I'll go and live with Jane.
Out. Yeah, maybe. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, really gutted about that.
Yeah,
but
very gutted.
We kind of wish you luck for the future, Clay, but if not, come back to us. We'll welcome you back with open arms. There you go. Right, comments from you guys. Ree, I believe you have an email.
We've got an email from Marty Kelly who says, hello, Rob and Ree, and greetings from North Carolina.
Hi.
I'm a huge fan of your podcast and think you're doing a fantastic job. I've been reading comments about your Landis sexual abuse episode, and while many don't think the flashbacks were necessary, I disagree for two reasons. First, they show that the pastor has a definite type, older women who grew up in an era where sexual abuse was underreported due to the shame felt by the victim. Second, the flashbacks showed how even when reported to various people, the church, friend, police, the pastor wasn't held accountable and was allowed to continue the abuse. It's been an interesting storyline so far and can't wait to see the pastor's behaviour exposed. I normally listen to the podcast while driving and I'm a YouTube subscriber. You're both very entertaining personalities and I hope you carry on for a very, very long time. Marty K.
Thanks, Marty Kay.
Thank you.
I honestly must live my EastEnders life in an echo chamber because I haven't seen anybody kicking off about the flashbacks. Have you?
No, I've not, to be fair, but obviously people have been.
Some people I just find sometimes a bit of a format change a bit difficult, don't they?
That's what I was going to say. I think at first, like you say, we were like, oh, what are you doing with this? But actually, it was quite important.
And how else could they demonstrate
what happened, really? Though,
I thought it was a really clever way of doing it. I really did.
Because we can't just hear Pastor Clayton talk to someone and say, oh, well, I did this to Dolores in 2001 and I did it. Like, there was no other way of showing it.
The only other way you could possibly have done it is if it ends up going to court and then you meet these women there who have sort of been, like you say, found by the police. So that was the only other way they could have done it. But I think that actually was a really effective way of doing it. And I thought all of the women were such strong performances as well. So I wouldn't mind seeing any of them in the future to come back for this storyline, actually. I wonder if that's a possibility at some point, somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, somehow, possibly. Yeah. The other thing that I think was important that Marty Kelly brought up there was... How the older women grew up in an era where sexual abuse was underreported.
Mm.
And you said it was due to the shame that they felt. But do you think it was also a bit more normalised in their era of... Yeah, but I'm being brutal and honest. Like, I dare say that it was more of a, well, it's just what's done, isn't it, kind of. Like, honestly, I think that...
I don't know. I don't know.
I just think that was quite an interesting take on it. And is that why Pastor Clinton's gone for older women? Because I think that they're less likely to report it.
Well, I think that he does it in an incredibly clinical way. You know, he's, for want of a better phrase, he's very good at what he does. You know, he knows exactly what to do, who to do it to. We can only hope that he's taken a misstep here and have done it to completely the wrong person and he will end up getting justice for it. But as we've said, and the way that the storyline was presented to us, I don't know how that's going to happen.
No.
Maggie Elizabeth Walsh on Facebook has said, bawling. Angela Winter is incredible and the flashbacks are so powerful, EastEnders at its best. Totally agree with that. Susan Perry has said that was a really difficult watch, but Angela Winter was incredible. I'm so glad Yolandi told Elaine. I think her pointing out what the pastor has done in a more analytical way was really helpful as a contrast to the raw pain Yolandi was trying to process. I hate that pastor so much, which is a testament to the great writing and acting. As the six said last year, to men, may they get what they deserve. Yeah, that's a theme, I think, of the show. At the, yeah.
Sorry, that's true. We've not mentioned how great the pastor has been at acting it.
Yeah, fair play to him.
We hate him, don't we?
We absolutely hate him. Yeah, it's he.
But well done.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't got the actor's name to hand at the moment, but yeah, no, he's good because he's a horrific character. Absolutely hateful. I want to punch him really hard in the face.
Yeah,
he's brilliant. Yeah. Next comment.
I've got another one from our Instagram page from Gardening Gems, who says the weaving in of the other women's stories to show the pattern of behaviour and how perpetrators in these positions get away with this over long periods of time was incredibly powerful. I really can't see how Yolandi is going to be able to hide this like she thinks, and I hope she changes her mind about reporting the pastor. Surely we need to see an abuser get served justice for his actual crimes.
But again,
interesting,
that's...
because
if
EastEnders show that he does, you know, get punished for his crimes, would that encourage more women to come forward? Because
You'd
I think that's a massive point of why
of
women... I mean, we're reading all these stats out. These are just crimes that are reported. So how many more are there that just go unreported because stats and the fact that
really,
nothing happens?
The really sad fact is that if you look at actually the history of soaps doing these sorts of storylines where the perpetrator gets justice brought to them, sad fact is that's probably a massive over-exaggeration of the facts about the number of people that actually get true justice to themselves. Like, the soaps are overshowing people getting justice for it, if anything. So,
but in a way, that could be a good thing, because then it might encourage more people to come forward generally if they think, well, maybe there is a chance if we push it.
Push for it. And finally, Rachel Fleming says, God, that was deeply uncomfortable viewing. Such a strong episode. What a performance from Angela. When the National Television Awards come around, she should win hands down. Or she should be happening. The Soap Awards should be happening this year. Thank you, ITV. We know your game. Don't pretend, all right? We know.
So blatant. It's so blatant, ITV. Come on.
Right, thank you very much for watching. Thank you very much for listening. If you would like to get in touch with us about anything that you have seen on EastEnders, you can do the following.
You can find us on Facebook at Albert Square After Dark, on Twitter and Instagram at E20 After Dark. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe. You can listen to us on Apple and all your favourite podcast sites. Drop us an email at e20afterdarkpodcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to buy us a coffee, you can do so by going on buymeacoffee.com/E20After Dark.
Yes, you can indeed. Thank you very much, Ree. Thank you very much for watching. We should be back same time next week for another podcast of a show that, my God, are we proud to be even talking about in our podcast terms. Well done, everybody. Well done. Until then, it is goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Bye. See you later.
Bye.